Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension soybean specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension corn specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
Welcome into the Purdue Crop Chat podcast. Eric Pfeiffer here from Hoosier Ag Today. And we appreciate our sponsors, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. I'm here with the stars of the show, Dan Corn Quinn. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Eric.
Soybean Sean Castile here as well. Hello, Sean.
Howdy, Eric.
And we welcome a special guest today, and that's Michael Langemeyer, the director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And I know, you know, you have your own podcast that you do through the Center for Commercial Ag with Jim Minchert, but, you know, You can have some fun on this one, Michael. You can let your hair down a little bit, okay? You can, you know, let loose.
Okay, I'll let down what little hair I have.
and I'll apologize. I'm a little hoarse today, which I guess, given the options, is better than being a fat cow. But I'm a little hoarse. I'm struggling through it, but we're going to make it happen. And we've got a big USDA report that came out on Tuesday that we need to talk through because. Boy, this one threw a lot of folks for a loop, and we're going to let Michael break a lot of that down here because it really did just kind of shake up the market a bit, certainly for a day and perhaps longer. That's what we want to talk about, or kind of some of the economics around this. But Dan, let's start with corn because this was, let's just say, not friendly for corn.
No. What are you talking about? I mean, those yields are great. That looks friendly.
Well, not friendly for the corn market, I guess I should say.
There you go.
A lot of acres going that way. What? I'm kind of in shock by what they're saying for Indiana. What say you?
Same boat as you. I was pretty surprised. You know, I expected an acreage increase from last year. I think, you know, Michael will talk a lot about, you know, even the acreage increase that we've seen within this year, because we had a pretty big swing years prior to more soybean acreage. And, you know, state like Indiana, where you have a lot of rotation and looking at the economics, you can see some of that swing back with corn acreage. But yeah, that was a surprise. I think the biggest surprise was the yield. I honestly have no idea where that number came from.
And what number is that, Dan?
So 205 bushels per acre is what the August report for the state of Indiana.
Which would be a record.
Would be a state record. And, you know, I said to myself when I saw that number, and this is the case for a lot of things today, is that I think to myself, either one, I'm missing something, or two, maybe I'm in an alternate reality sometimes. But yeah,
as long as you're just thinking to yourself and not, you know, talking to yourself.
Yeah, I do think to myself sometimes. But yeah, it was surprising. You know, you look at the crop condition. We've talked about this all year, just the variability in the state, the troubles we had with planting in the southern parts of the state, eastern parts of the state. You know, a lot of June corned, planted corn, replanted corn in those areas. You look at northwest Indiana, it's dry. I was up in northwest Indiana yesterday. That crop, you know, they've caught rain, but it's stressed. They could use some more rain. There's some good corn out there. You know, you look at the western, kind of west central part of the state is where it's pretty strong. But, you know, just in comparison of the last few years, this crop is just not on par with the last few years.
I was gonna say, what part of the state is it that they're locking you out of that you can't get to that has this like 400 bushel corn?
Yep,
apparently,
yeah.
This number came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think there's a secret Garden of Eden somewhere in the state, and I haven't had access to. But yeah,
have been banished.
Probably been banished. But yeah, it's surprising. Just, you know, traveling around the state and looking at crop conditions and where things are at, even in our own trials, we, you know, a lot of disease out there. That's really moved. You know, these high temperatures, these high nighttime temperatures, I think are going to impact grain fill. You know, we've had some pollination issues here and there. You know, talking about one tassel wrap, but tip back has been popping up in quite a few areas just where it's been dry and hot. So there's a lot of issues this year. And even looking at the good to excellent ratings, you know, our good to excellent ratings this time this year in comparison to last year, you know, last year This isn't the highest yield estimate that the August report has had. Last year was, they predicted 207. That eventually came down to 198. You know, this year is 205. But our crop condition ratings are lower this year. I think we're about 63% good to excellent. Last year, we're approaching about 70% good to excellent, you know, 68-69% good to excellent this time last year. So that's what's really surprising. Just the conversations with farmers, agronomists all around the state that I've had, even in our own trials, it's just the same sentiment of this crop just isn't as good as what it's been the last few years. So that's what makes the number really surprising.
Well, if you're watching on the video podcast version here, you can see this is when Sean does his prep work for the podcast. it's while Dan talks.
I never listen. I just make these quips every now and then, so I have more time. That's the only reason I do it.
So we'll get to Sean here in a moment. I want to come to Michael here and talk about this corn predicament we're in now, given this was a bit of a shocker yesterday, right?
Two huge shocks in my mind. One is the shift of 2 million acres from soybeans to corn. So corn acreage ended up this year at 97.3 million acres. That's similar to what we planted in 2007, which was the start of the ethanol boom. And so that was a huge surprise. The second surprise was the yield estimate at the U.S. level at 188.8. I think the market was anticipating the yield being up. I was thinking maybe 184, 185, but it was 188.8. And so, that's way over our previous high by about 9 bushel. So that's a record, but it's nine bushel over the previous record. Yeah. That is substantial. All that combines into a production increase of 13%, by far and away the largest production we've seen in terms of U.S. corn production. And what it really did is it took the stocks to use from something that was not tight, but was close to being tight at 10.5, all the way up to 13.3. 13.3, if you follow stocks to use, is not a tight stock situation by any stretch of the imagination. And I hate to be a little depressing here, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway.
Isn't that what economists do? I mean, isn't that...
Not always.
Are we going to start calling them Eeyore here?
There we go.
But in 2014 to 2019, our stocks to use was 12 to 14%. We're in that same territory again. And if you remember back, the U.S. marketing year price was hovering around 350 during that time period. And so before the report, we were looking at cash corn prices across the Corn Belt as low as 330 in South Dakota to about 380 in Indiana. That was before the report. And so certainly we're going to see a drop in those prices. I don't see a scenario unless they adjust this yield down rather substantially for corn to be above $4 cash this fall.
Don't they have to, Dan? Don't they have to make an adjustment at some point here? Like, it just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, it has to come down, at least, from an Indiana perspective. Looking at last year, right, they started at 207, ended up at 198. I would hope, I guess, and my expectations is that our final numbers should be lower than where we were last year. In those mid 190s, still above trend, but not, state record, not better than the last couple of years. So we'll see as combine numbers start to come through and yields start to come in this fall, just how much it drops. I do, you look at the national average, one thing I've continued to point to on the national side is just Iowa. Iowa has had an outstanding crop this year. I know they've had some challenges and recent challenges and some issues coming out of that state, but looking at crop condition ratings, I mean, they've been close to about 90% good to excellent in that state.
Yeah. And Minnesota is also a state that's just been unbelievable to watch. I mean, the ratings weren't real great last year up in that area, but this year, I mean, they're looking at increases of 15%. Yeah. In terms of yields. And so Iowa and Minnesota, I think, are sweet spots.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where that Garden of Eden is up there.
That's where it is,
I was just looking as you're talking about Iowa. They've got predicted at 222. Yes. Illinois at 221. You brought up Minnesota at 202. I mean, those are some, again, extremely strong numbers.
Yes. And those states swing that number quite a bit.
There's a lot of acreage there.
Yep. Yeah, there was quite a bit of continuous corn in that region. If you look at continuous corn this year, there was Nebraska always has a lot of continuous corn, but they had more than usual. Iowa, the ratio of corn to soybeans this year was about 1.45. That's over the long-run trend, and it's considerably higher than last year. And then also Minnesota had quite a bit of continuous corn. And so people are scratching their heads. Where did all this corn come from? Well, those in continuous corn region, not Indiana, not Ohio, but those that sometimes plant continuous corn did so in a very big way this year.
Yes. As we look at just the market itself here, Michael, and again, speaking to corn specifically, you know, yesterday, as we sit here and talk on the morning of Wednesday, after the report yesterday, lost double digits in corn. Here this morning, we're up a few, maybe a little bit of a corrective action here, but again, still below $4. You're saying that with these numbers where they're at long term, it's going to be a little tough to eclipse that $4 mark?
I think definitely, and for a while here, we're probably going to be closer. If you look at the tip from a U.S. average price, we're going to be closer to $3.50. And another thing you're going to see that this fall, maybe not in Indiana in spots, and it just depends on how big this crop is, but you definitely in Iowa and Minnesota, where the crop is extremely large, the basis is going to be weak. Mm-hmm. And so, when people are marketing this year's crop, be cognizant of that the basis is going to be weak at harvest, and it's not like we're expecting a huge increase early in the year, but the basis probably will strengthen a little bit once we get past harvest.
Yeah. Let's turn our attention to soybeans now, Sean. This is where you shine.
Oh, you think so?
Maybe.
Well, it's going to be a state record
shine,
then, right? 62 bushels. That's what they got us at.
62 bushels. Are you missing that Garden of Eden, too? Have you been banished?
So. Oh, yeah. Well, I've been banished from more than one place, I guess. But, yeah, in terms of the Indiana numbers, they have 62 bushels as the forecast for this month. And going back in time, we look at, okay, last year, we actually had August report was 62 as well. And that was kind of a tough spot. So in terms of good to excellent ratings, Dan mentioned that. And so I'll echo it. You know, this year, we just haven't been as good as far as a crop at the state level. Certainly as we travel the state, we know those pockets. I was in southeast Indiana a couple weeks ago, and they've struggled all season long. And it's just rough. You got the dry areas that you talked about, the Northwest. It is a story of the haves and have-nots, and there's a lot more of have-nots than that haves, from what I can tell. In terms of a little bit of history lesson here, so last year, as we were at 62 at the August report, we even went up one more bushel in September last year, which I still was like, what's going on there? But we ended 24 with 59 bushels, right? And so I think that we are definitely heading downward. We've got to. There's no way with what I see out there. As we look at 24 crop, good to excellent was 69% last year. So, again, we're tracking lower than last year. We're tracking lower than some of the other record years. 2023 was a record year for us and corn, I believe. And so that year, just to put, okay, there could be some bushels out there. I don't think they're there. But 23 at this time was 66 good to excellent. So it wasn't crazy higher than what we are now, but we have just been tracking that lower, you know, 60s for most of the season on good to excellent. So I see us having to go down in what we've got out there in the crop.
And Michael, on Tuesday, on report day, 20 cent gains for that soybean market. Here so far today, we're up over a dime on new crop beans. Where does this sit? I mean, there are a lot of acres shifted there, like you mentioned.
Yeah, the 2 million decrease from the previous estimate. We're down. We're down about 7 million or 6 million. 6 million. 6 million acres from last year, so that's a 7% decrease. But that's the good news. The yield is up 6%. And so when you look at the production, we're only down 2%. So even though the acreage is down substantially, smallest acres back to 2007 again, that started the ethanol boom, smallest acres since then, we're only down 2%. And what's really, really hurting the soybean market right now, let's just get right to it, is weak exports. Weak export projections. USDA is projecting the exports are going to be down 9% in 25-26 compared to 24-25. They weren't great last year. And so if we could see some strength in exports, I'd actually think we'd see some strength in cash soybean prices. And one of the things I noticed in the WASDE report is they kept the projected U.S. soybean price right at 10-10. So they didn't change it. That's certainly good news. And Sean will like this. One of the things we're seeing right now is a very strong soybean to corn ratio. The historical average is about 2.4, slightly higher than that. We're getting in 2.6, 2.7 range. And so, I think you're looking ahead to next year. I'll just stick my neck out here a little bit. I don't think this is a big surprise. We're probably going to see an increase in soybean acreage next year, mm-hmm. with the uncertainty being what happens to the export market. The crush market is killing it. We got a 5% increase in crush again this year. So the crush market is really keeping that soybean price up with that decline in exports.
Now, we typically don't go here on this podcast because we typically talk, we talk dirt. We have some fun while doing it. But
food and dirt.
Food and dirt. That's where we go. But, and disease too, I guess. That's not so much fun. But this trade area, it's a sticky one right now, and folks can have whatever opinion they want. You can look back to the previous administration where it seemed, at least from the farmer perspective, that nothing was being done on trade. It just wasn't a priority. Obviously, President Trump and his administration comes in, trade is a priority, but it kind of gets kicked down because of the deals trying to be made and the tariffs that are coming. I guess, Michael, from a long-term, this has to make your job hard to try to figure out what could come, because we don't know what deal is going to get announced next, what agreement we can come to. It's got to make trying to prognosticate a little difficult.
Look at that word.
Yeah, that was a big one.
I'm going to start with the Ag Economy Barometer results, and then I'll talk about what I think is going on here a little bit. When you look at the Ag Economy Barometer, we've asked people specifically, do you think the tariff situation is going to decrease your net farm income? And more people think it's going to decrease their 2025 net farm income than think it's going to increase. And so that's kind of where the U.S. Ag is thinking this is heading for this year. However, if you ask them questions about is all the policy changes we're making, which would include trade, the farm safety net, all of that, do you think that's going to be positive for agriculture long term, next 5 years? Overwhelmingly, they say yes. And so short-term hurt, they think long-term this is going to benefit us. Now let's get down to the skinny looking at this year. It seems like we're going to pause the tariff increase again with China. That's good, but what I'm really scared of is we lost market share in 2018 on soybeans. I'm afraid that we're going to lose a little bit more market share again this time. Historically, 50% of the soybean crop has been exported. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're down to below 40%. So I emphasize the crush market. Yeah. Without that very strong crush market, particularly the soybean oil, soybeans would not be $10. Soybeans, it's kind of a mixed bag right now. The lower acreage is positive, the crush market's positive, but the export market is not. That's why I always do the caveat with soybean price projections. It depends on what the export market does.
Well, I appreciate that from, as I talked about the yield on the soybean side, I talked to Indiana specific, and I don't see these numbers. Mm-hmm. But whenever you have the national scale that we're down 2%, so price is up. So, this is what you want, right? It's like, okay, Sean, stop, going down that we don't have that yield out there, mm-hmm. whenever we got price too. Like you want this combination, you don't want your next door neighbor to have poor price and poor yield, but like if you got good yield and fair price, that's not a bad scenario. So, beans can make up some. I just don't see it right now, but I'm glad we got a little bit better.
Yeah, and then the increase in bean yields from the U.S. perspective, it's not like corn.
Yeah.
And it's early.
Yep.
I think August is a pretty early projection for beans. I think you'd agree with that. There's a lot of regions where there's still some yields could be lost or not be as good
lost
as what we
or
thought.
Lost or gain, right? So you think about this. So the month growing up, it was, okay, what month makes or breaks soybean yield? It's August. Well, it's August and September now. So it's like this point now, middle of August to the first 2 weeks of September makes or break this crop. And I think that's where we're at.
Yeah.
And when I look to these numbers, always the August report's just a funny yield number, because Dan, what it's really based on is some aerial imagery essentially, right? Some NDVI, some biomass and stands, right? There's no yield, truly yield component in this, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And that's the tough part with these estimates. And also, you know, I touched on, you know, some of the pollination issues and tip back and stuff like that. Where I've been finding a lot of those have been in areas where the corn, if you're driving by or flying it, you'd go, hey, that looks great. So that's the challenge with these estimates. Another challenge with just yield estimates, period, from these reports, but also just even pulling ears. You know, you think about the yield tour that's going to come through and all that aspect. It's really hard to account for grain fill in these crops and the weight and the size of those kernels. It's just something you can't really determine until that crop's hit maturity and dried down. And that can have a big influence on yield as well. So if we, you know, continue with, you look at the temperatures we have now, these high temperatures, if disease continues to persist, you know, there's a lot of areas that lost a lot of nutrients, you know, nitrogen from corn earlier because of, you know, heavy rainfall. You look at, you know, Kokomo area and Tipton County that had 6-7 inch rainfalls, mm-hmm. In those areas, they're going to start hitting those deficiencies a lot sooner than maybe they should. So a lot of those areas may be impacted from the grain fill aspect. And when the combine goes through, they may say, okay, why is my yield maybe not as good as what I thought? So that's always a tricky part with these estimates, is that it's really hard to get the entire story of what the yield is going
to
be.
I wanted to talk a little bit about potential volatility here. Mm-hmm. On the corn side, unfortunately, we're looking at fairly low prices and not a lot of volatility. With the stocks mm-hmm. to use we have, like I said, it would take a really large change in yield at this point to move that needle. We're trying to eat the corn. Feed is up 7.5%, ethanol is up 2%, and we already had a very large ethanol production last year, and exports are up 2%. So we're trying to eat through that pile, but like I tell producers, the pile is big, and it's going to take a while to eat through that pile. Whereas on the soybean side, we're actually stocks to use is below average. And so we could see a little more volatility in soybeans if the yield's not quite as high as what they thought. We could see a little bit of upside, actually, in soybeans.
So eat more steak is what he's saying.
No problem.
need to increase the cattle herd.
Yes.
That would help.
No problem here. All right, so you guys all play your roles. We've got Dan with corn, Sean with soybeans, and Michael here with money. I'm going to play my part right after we take this break. I'm going to ask the dumb questions. I've got a dumb one just sitting right here, ready to go, and we'll do that when we come back here on the Purdue Crop Chat podcast, presented by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance.
I'm Matthew Chapman, and I farm in Henry County, Indiana. Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Marketing Council invest checkoff dollars into building demand for corn and soybeans internationally. I've seen this work firsthand, and it's been eye-opening to see the growth in these markets, which also brings dollars back to our farms. Promoting U.S. corn and soybeans and increasing global demand is critical to the success of farmers right here in Indiana.
This message is brought to you by the Indiana Soybean and Corn Checkoffs.
And we're back here on the Purdue Crop Chat podcast, presented by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Only appropriate, we come to you from the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center here in West Lafayette. I'm Eric Pfeiffer with Dan Corn Quinn, Soybean Sean Castile, and Michael Money Langemeyer.
That's
a nickname, right?
Oh man,
that sounds like he's in the WWE or something.
There you go, off the turnbuckle. Here he comes, with the folding chair.
It sounds like he has like one of those financial podcasts. You know, people call in.
Yeah. Like Mad Money, like
yes.
that.
Yeah.
We need to get you a dollar sign belt buckle that you can start wearing around.
Yeah. Big gold chain. We're going to go too far with this, right? Big old gold chain with the dollar symbol.
There we go. Okay, so here, I promised a dumb question. Here it is. Sean, for a long time now, you've been talking about soybeans are the ones making money.
Yeah.
All right? Soybeans are the ones out there. They're the most profitable.
Yep.
So I've got to ask the question, why in the heck are people planting this much corn? Continuous corn. Like, why? If soybeans are the moneymaker, what's going on?
Okay. I'm from the Western Corn Belt, okay. So I think I have the answer to this. In terms of an Indiana, and I throw Ohio in there too, soybeans are very, very competitive with corn. And if you look at our soybean yields, they're very comparable to what you see in the Western Corn Belt. when it comes to corn, sorry, Dan, we have some places in Indiana that are just as good as Iowa, just as good as Illinois, but it's not the entire state. Mm-hmm. And so our corn yields tend to be a little bit lower than Iowa and Illinois, and so we tend to be 50-50. In fact, I was looking at this earlier this morning. We've had more soybean than corn acres since 2016.
Mm-hmm. Dan, when did you start, by the way?
It was after that.
Oh, okay. So you're not to blame.
We're still trying to get Indiana Beach to change their slogan. There's more than soybeans in Indiana.
Illinois is usually 50-50. Illinois is a little bit heavier corn this year. Mm-hmm. But when you get to Iowa, like I said, earlier in the podcast, there was 40% more corn. So the ratio was 1.4 in Iowa and 2.2 in Nebraska. Earlier in the spring, I was talking to some people I know in Nebraska, and they were talking corn. Corn was on their mind, and sure enough, they did plant a lot of continuous corn in Nebraska. And so corn is just more, relatively more profitable in the Western Corn Belt, and that makes continuous corn seem really as a good option, particularly this spring. I talked about the soybean to corn ratio being really high right now. It wasn't like that this spring. The market really wanted more corn, and it got more corn in spades. In terms of both the yield and production, but the market was wanting more corn, and that's where the more corn came from, is this Western Corn Belt.
Did it have anything to do with some of these trade uncertainties?
I think that played into it? Very good point. I think that was also part of it. The soybean to corn ratio was low, but we also were concerned about soybean exports. Corn, we export a lot of corn. From a quantity standpoint, but in terms of market share,
mostly to Mexico, right?
Yeah, and from a market share, it's 15%, and a lot of that with Mexico, a very good trading partner, and so there's a little bit less uncertainty with the exports for corn, and we've increased the exports of corn, but it's still only 18%, whereas the soybeans is 40%, and so when you have worries about soybean exports, that's going to make you a little bit more cautious in planting soybeans.
We need more people to buy Skechers, is what needs to happen here in the U.S. so we can. You know, have I bought soybean tires for my vehicle.
Nice.
So I've got those on my minivan. They need to make them for the Hatmobile. They don't have them in that size. I'm gonna have to get on Goodyear and be like, come on, man, come, let's go.
Yeah. And then another factor. I'll go a little more international. Brazil's very competitive with soybeans and have been increasing soybean acreage for a long time now, and that doesn't seem to be ending. And so if we cut acreage, there's still enough world soybeans. In fact, if you look at U.S., Brazil, and Argentina, that's 82% of all soybeans in the entire world coming from three countries, and Brazil's 40%. When I started my career in 2012, Brazil's market share was 30%, and so it's went up 10% in just a few years, actually, it seems like overnight, it's went up 10%. And so corn, we tend to be the king when it comes to corn. We're by far and away the largest producer, and our yields are really strong compared to most of the rest of the world. And so part of this is coming from the international scene. We have more competitors on the soybean side than we have on the corn side.
Now, you know that many farmers blame you guys for this whole Brazil thing, right? You guys know, because you guys went down there, somebody went and taught them how to do this whole soybean thing.
I'm actually traveling there in 10 days, so maybe I can change my message.
Don't teach them how to plant corn. Yeah, I mean, we've already got it figured out up here.
I can teach them corn, but I could also teach them how to sabotage the soybeans.
You've been trying for how many years, and we got the acreage still.
I'm just saying, it's out there, and this is a thing now. Brazil, they have a large market share. Yeah. So what other numbers, Michael, jump out at you from this report that came out on Tuesday, the August WASDE report? I mean, it pretty well shook the market. Soybeans one direction, corn the other direction. Wheat, I know, fell. I don't know that was anything in the numbers here. I just know that it happened. I didn't do my homework either, like Sean.
The homework.
You're just doing it now.
Who sent the text yesterday? It said, look at this number.
It was you. I actually, so Sean sent the numbers, and I just responded with a Dwight Schrute meme that said, false because I just don't believe it. But Michael, what other numbers jump out at you from this WASD report?
One of the things that was a little surprising to me, I'm going to stick to the soybean side. I mean, I talked about the corn side being a very big surprise, both in terms of the yield and that increase in acreage. But on the soybean side, people might be thinking, well, we got 81 million acres of soybeans. That's really low compared to where we were last year and where we have been since 2007. We've been higher than that, from 2008 all the way to 2024. Does that mean that we're short supply of soybeans? And the short answer is no. We have plenty of soybeans to meet the current crush demand and the current export demand. I sound like a broken record. If we could increase those exports, then we might be a little shorter supply. But we're not necessarily short supply of soybeans. But I do think we're short enough that soybeans are going to look a little bit more attractive come planting time next year.
Well, I think you bring up the acreage, and that's certainly a major part of this switch in production. But there's something that's gone on in the soybean world in the last, 7-8 years that we've seen strong changes in the way we manage this crop. And so those changes, planting date's one example. It's not the only thing that does it, but, I mean, we're planting the beans a lot earlier across the Midwest in particular. Now, some of the southern locations, southern states, you don't get as much of a gain from that, depending on the state. But we're having earlier plantings across the Midwest. Yields, you start looking at the state-level yields of these states the last 7-8 years, they've been pretty much break record, and a lot of that's dealing with timely planting, and so that's coming into, okay, yeah, even if acreage is kind of so-so, our yield levels have been on the higher side the last 7-8 years.
That's a very good point, and people talk about the trend yield in corn, and it really is phenomenal, Dan. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, 2 bushel per year mm-hmm. across the Corn Belt is very typical. Soybeans are no slouch.
Yep.
When it comes to increases in trend, it's a half bushel, but that half bushel adds up to a lot of bushels
right.
over time.
Well, and then you've got to start putting those on a percent, right? Everyone does
yes.
a bushel, and a half a bushel in soybeans versus 3 bushel, yep. 2 bushel, whatever yeah. it is in corn. I mean, that's not apples to apples by any
yeah,
means.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, but that's what I'm. What the point I'm trying to make is that's a very strong yield
yeah.
for both.
Yeah,
the trend is very strong for both. If you look, particularly if you did it percentage wise,
yep.
and I think that's the point you were making.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's clear. These guys aren't going to come right out and say it. I'll do it, and I'll speak for myself alone. But we disagree with this USDA number. I mean, it's just not right.
If you haven't got the trend of this message today.
If you haven't figured that out yet, there it is. Let's turn this around, okay? Sean, to reach 62 bushels per acre on a statewide average, what needs to happen for the rest of the year?
Yep. You order up that timely rain, nice sunshine. We're not going to have the clouds, so we maximize photosynthetic capacity. You have the water then to work through all of that in terms of transpiration, all those plant physiological things, and have good seed fill, right? We're right at R5 with a lot of the crops, so that's beginning seed, seed fill, and this is that linear phase, and so we can put on the most bushels during this period. And, in a really advanced crop in terms of yield management, water supply, sunlight, temperature, all those things, we can put upwards of 4 bushels per acre per day, right? And so if we've got all that clicking, we can really add a lot to it. If it turns down, that's the thing with soybeans. We talk about August and September making or breaking it. This crop, if we don't have the water, it's going to shut down. Even if it had the potential to keep on going, it had the potential. But if you shut down the water supply, you're really losing out on a day or 2 days, and now it's 2, 3, 4 bushels, you name it, on the upside of it. So I think we're at that point of good moisture supply, temperatures that match. If we get into these lower temperatures at night, like the 50s, like which can happen in this later August to September, and we have several of those days in a row, what ends up happening photosynthetically, we're not as efficient. And so if we have too low of temperatures, we can actually get hit on that. So we need to have that nice continuum of moisture and temperature.
So we need it to be perfect.
That's it.
That's it. Okay.
That's all.
It's an easy request. Yes.
Dan, to get to, what, 205?
Oh, a big part of it is moisture and temperature. If we can extend that grain fill period as much as we can, The challenge with that is, you know, we've had some issues with pollination and kernel abortion, and disease is another aspect of that. And a lot of those, there isn't much we can do at this point. You know, on the disease front, that's been a challenge this year. I've had a lot of conversations with farmers just because they're seeing disease, but fungicides aren't cheap, and when corn is getting down to, you know, sub $4, and it's really hard to, you know, either make a second pass or even make a pass period. So that's been challenging as well, because we're seeing some of these fungicides that were applied at Tassel, they have good activity for maybe 21 days, you know, 3 weeks, and then now that disease is ramping back up in a lot of those areas. You'll get southern rust, which is pretty prevalent around the state.
I was going to say, some people dealing with diseases they've never dealt with before, yes. Like southern rust up in yes. northern Indiana.
Yeah, southern rust in northern Indiana. We had southern rust in our northeast research trials, and I had it in our northwest research trials as well. And those are particular areas that we don't typically worry about it. That's a disease. I've heard it's the original tar spot because it, you know, we've had it
OG.
It's the OG. But you know, it can be a destructive disease, and it can move quickly. So that's been a challenge as well. You know, corn, you know, month of July has the biggest influence on, you know, final yields and state average yields, but you know, we can make up quite a bit of yield with this grain fill period, but again, it's kind of Sean's point. We have to have the stars align in a lot of areas, and the challenge with that is if we have cooler temps, if we have, you know, adequate soil moisture, what else does that influence something like disease or aspects on the back end of the season? But a lot of it from the corn side, there's not much we can do because the issues were at planting, and some of the issues were, you know, nitrogen loss due to heavy rainfall and replant and just uneven crops. And there's just not a lot we can make up at this point in time. We can do a little bit, you know, having decent grain fill, but it's really challenging to do much.
That, I think that's where the soybeans do come and shine, that we can still make up a lot of ground at this point in terms of the next 4 weeks.
Yep.
Michael, let's talk. He was talking about folks and fungicide, trying to make that decision, hard to justify right now. What do you have as the break-even prices right now for corn and soybeans, and how do these markets play into
Eeyore
it?
Eeyore just completely left the room.
Yeah. Here comes the depression.
Oh, here it comes.
Off the turnbuckle.
can we add some theme music to this, Greg? Greg Allenbeck here, he's helping produce this. Can we add some really dark theme music right now?
The Undertaker enters the room.
Well, unfortunately, the break-evens have been high ever since COVID. They're about 20% higher for both corn and soybeans than they were prior to COVID. The corn break-even right now, even on high productivity ground, is $4.90. So it's way above where the prices are. But so are the soybeans.
Yep.
You look at the soybean break-even, it's about $11.50, $11.60 on high productivity. Mm-hmm. It can be over $12 on average to low, below average productivity ground. And I get quite a few questions related to financial stress. There is going to be more financial stress this year than there has been for a while. And I'll start that by saying that if you look at the ethanol boom period, 2007 to today, 2025 is probably the worst year we've seen during that period. But when you look at financial stress, there's two things you look at. Relatively low net returns, we've got that this year. I mean, net returns are going to be pretty low for corn and soybean producers. But you also look at the balance sheet. And the balance sheet right now is pretty strong. We had a lot of liquidity coming out of the very good crops in 21, 22, and not too bad a crop in 23. So the liquidity is drawing down a little bit, but it's not in a danger zone right now. But on the long side of the balance sheet, land values continue to hold steady. That is key to the financial condition of the agriculture sector. And as long as that holds, and most economists are expecting to be relatively flat here in the next 12 months, along with the Ag Economy Barometer, that's the results from the Ag Economy Barometer, the balance sheet's going to be relatively strong. And so we're going to have a little bit of a tick up in financial stress, but it could be a lot worse if that balance sheet was weaker. And the period they always bring up was the 1980s. We're not even close to that because the balance sheet was much, much worse looking, entering the early 1980s, going into the mid-1980s.
You skipped ahead on me. I was about ready to ask that. I was listening to a speaker yesterday at the Keystone Co-op Classic, their first event there, and I was happy to MC that event. It was pretty cool. And there was a speaker there yesterday, and he was kind of along those same lines. I asked him, I was like, people keep asking about the 80s. Are we headed back there? And he said, absolutely not. No. Get that out of your head.
We are heading back probably the 2014 to 2019 period. That's the period I think where we could be in that kind of situation where the returns are relatively low, but the balance sheet holds pretty strong.
All right. Michael, while we have you here and before we wrap up today's Purdue Crop Chat, talk about the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture. You've referenced the Ag Economy Barometer a couple of times now, and I know that's a big project that you have within the Center for Commercial Ag. Just highlight some of the things that you do there and some of the tools that folks can take advantage of.
Yeah, in addition to the Ag Economy Barometer, which is a monthly sentiment index, I always try to refer to that in every interview I do, every publication that I write, every presentation. Essentially, besides that, we have a website that contains various tools. We have our crop budget there. We have our crop basis tool is on the Center for Commercial Agriculture website. But recently, I'm going to introduce some of those here in the next week. I put together quite a pretty long list of leasing publications. So comparing fixed cash rent leases to share leases to flex leases. I think that this is a good time to think about a flex lease this year because the base rent's typically lower than the market cash rent, but you have a chance for a bonus. And so if I'm wrong and prices do look better for corn in particular next year, you could get a bonus from a flex lease. Or if the yields are really high, you could get a bonus. And so there's some publications related to that. I've also added a publication related to hay and pasture leases. We no longer have hay and pasture leases in our Purdue cash rent land value survey. And so I've added a publication and a spreadsheet related to those. Speaking of which, the Purdue cash rent land value survey, I'm going to send an email out from the center next week releasing those results, and so those results will be out next week. And so in addition to that, if you like farm finance, which I'm sure everybody listening truly does,
they're deep into it.
That's my passion.
You know this audience, don't you?
That's my passion. We've got a series of publications talking about financial statements and financial analysis on the website too.
Just do a Google search for Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture. It's the best way to find them. They've got so many things you can take advantage of. Again, as we wrap up today, Sean, final thoughts on the Purdue Crop Chat.
Yeah, I just think we go through what's perfect to get this yield, so then we can capitalize on what market we've got that's decent on the soybean. But I also want to think about, as we go into harvest in a month and a half, right, we think about, okay, what can we do to get everything that's there? Probably more so for my colleague here is like, okay, where can you save some money? It's probably like when you're pulling the trigger on harvesting that corn, that moisture content, I think about drying costs. And on the soybean side, it's like, get as much as you can at 13-14% moisture instead of going down to the 9-10s. And again, Mother Nature is a big deal on that, but trying to be timely to get as much as we can.
Dan?
Yeah, I think it comes back to, these tough times, you have to be smarter and savvier, in the way you manage the crop and the way you handle finances and economics. Michael giving examples on that front. Some of the best farmers that can get through these areas, they're really savvy and smart and use all their resources and tools on the economic side. But also on the agronomic side, just understanding, is there areas, is there things that we can do to maybe, cut that cost a little bit? Maybe we can wait a little bit on the harvest with drying costs. You think about P&K management as we get into the fall, is there some fields that maybe we can get away with not having P or K applied? Is there some products that maybe you've been applying that maybe just haven't been seeing much of a return on them? Is there some things we can back off on? So seed as well, that's another big thing that we've kind of stressed with corn is that, corn does have some adaptability in their seed and seeding rates and plant populations. Is that something, hey, we've been at, say, 35,000, looking at next year, maybe we can go to 32 or 31 in certain areas. So just learning, that's something we stress every year is learning what's working well, what's not working well, being smart, being savvy and understanding, hey, is this an area maybe we can cut costs or maybe we can skip this year on this side. So I think that's a big big key as we get into these tougher economic times. It just you can't just apply everything under the sun and do everything, you know.
Because if you did, you'd have 500 bushel.
That's true. They keep saying that everything
this adds 3 bushels.
Yeah, 3 to 5. Three to five bushel. But understanding, is it truly giving you 3 to 5 bushel? But yeah, it's a lot of the same points that we've heard today. It's just you gotta be smart, understand what worked, what didn't. You know, is there some genetic pieces that maybe we can back off a little bit? Is there some, you know, do I need that heavy trait package on that crop? So just taking a look at things in your own environment, your own location, and understanding what works and what doesn't. Nobody knows that better than the individual farmer on their own field. So just taking a good hard look at it and moving into next year. And I think expecting next year is going to be tough. So going into next year with that mindset that it's going to be tough, it's going to be tight is important.
So Dan, I think we both have a question for Eric.
Yeah.
What's the number?
Yeah. I'm going to write it down here.
What is your number, Eric? I'm taking notes. We're recording. What is your number for soy Indiana and corn Indiana?
We're playing Price is Right rules, right?
That's like, right.
Just can't
no
go
whammy,
over.
No whammy, no whammy.
I'm going $1. $1,
Bob.
Yeah. Drew, come
it's
on.
Drew, oh,
yeah,
right.
Come on. How all long right. have you been? Oh, my goodness.
Well, what do you think? You know, when you're sick and you're a young kid, you're at grandma's, you know, you watch Bob Barker.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Or faking sick.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's true.
None of your students are listening. No, I would. Boy, I'm going to stick with what you guys say, which is what I'm going to turn around right now. I'm going to say it's not.
I'm with you, fellas.
It's not 205 and it's not 62, right?
So it's more? Is that what you're saying?
No, I would say not. I tell you what, I'm going to go 57 and a half.
Oh, all right. Let's see.
And I'm going to go 187.
187. Wow, that's a 20 bushel drop, or almost 20 bushel drop.
Well, so. I think you said 183 last time, didn't you?
I did. I don't remember that.
I'm pretty sure.
I said 58 and a half on soy, so we'll see.
So what do you say, Dan?
He always turns it back.
Uh-huh, well, that's my job. At least he threw a number out.
Yeah. No, you look at where we were last year, it was 198 at the end of the story. I don't think we're there this year, so I would put it in the lower 190s. If I was writing the numbers and where
you
I
are writing the numbers.
Now, Sean is physically writing the numbers.
I am writing the number
yeah.
here.
My numbers don't shift the market significantly. but, yeah, I think you know, in the lower 190s, if you look at where we're at conditions okay. and where we were at last year, yeah.
Okay. Sean?
Well, I said
what's your number?
58 and a half. I'm still sticking with.
You're sticking with 58 and a half. Okay. Yep. All right. Michael?
Well, my budgets have 195 and 60, so that'd be my guesstimates.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's not screw
Hoping
up.
Hoping that the break-evens aren't even higher than what I told you.
Let's not screw up your estimates there. Michael, thank you for joining us on the Purdue Crop Chat today. Really appreciate it. Guys, thanks. We'll do this again soon. We'll see. We'll find out soon enough if our numbers are anywhere close. The thing is, we're going to have to get them from USDA, so we'll see how all that goes. Man, this one was an interesting one, but we'll take a look next month and see where we're at and go from there. So, thanks a lot, appreciate it.
Thanks, Eric.
For Dan Corn Quinn, Soybean Sean Castile, and Michael Money Langemeyer, I'm Eric Pfeiffer. Be safe, be well.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile, made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The Checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension and Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.